We're going to the phones. Welcome to the program. State Senator Nikki Torres from the 15th. Senator, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the invite.
So first, congratulations are in order. Your school safety bill passed out of committee. So tell us a little bit about this bill and what improvements it would make in schools around the state.
Well, the really cool thing about this bill is that when I was touring some of the schools in my district, and one of them happened to be Mount Adams School District, which is just a little bit outside of my district, but it's, you know, relatively close. So some of the students actually live in my district, but that the school is just outside the border of the district lines. So what it showed me when I was touring that school is that, you know, every school is a little different, and this one's a really older school, and they don't receive much funding. They're a federally impacted school, and federally impacted means that they receive federal dollars based on how many, like, tribal students they have. And so because of that, they also don't receive any, they are not able to pass any bonds or levies as well. So they don't get a whole lot of money from the area as it is, and they get some, but not enough, obviously, from federal funds. And what we've noticed is that their school has a lot of the outside doors, so you could just literally walk on campus and go to one of the doors. And I know most of them try to keep the doors locked, but one thing that they did not have is panic buttons. And there's a lot of safety features that a lot of the schools have been implementing, but in our research, we found after contacting, my office contacted 295 school districts in the state, and we received roughly about 194 responses back from districts. Of all those districts that responded, they ensure that all exterior doors are locked, while 42 districts still lack key card access. And then panic or lockdown buttons are installed in about 107 districts, though some of those systems are outdated or they're partially implemented. And they do need, some of them really just need to be replaced. Also fencing, like some of the schools, like I said, this one is pretty open. The fencing varies significantly, with 71 districts having some fencing, 57 lacking it entirely, and 50 school districts being fully enclosed. So that is very telling. And what we found was when we were looking up safety features for our schools, for our school districts, after touring some of them, like, you know, what would be most beneficial for our school districts without creating an unfunded mandate? And we came across Alyssa's Law. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Alyssa's Law.
A little bit.
Okay. So I had the opportunity to actually speak with Alyssa's mom. So in Valentine's Day 2018 in Parkland, Florida is when the shooting occurred. Mm-hmm. There was a school shooting. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, Alyssa Al-Hadef ended up losing her life that day. And because of that, her mom has been a huge advocate going around states and pushing for panic buttons or emergency buttons in the schools, because every second counts, and especially when we have a school shooting. And it, not only that, but it can also help if there is a faculty member that's having like a heart attack or something, and they hit the button and are able to get help right away. So there's different scenarios where that can be used. And we were able to pass this off of the Senate floor on Wednesday.
Nice.
And in the bill, we were able to add a little clause in there calling it Alyssa's Law as well, to kind of to go along with what is already being and what's taking place across several states. So the amendment's just recognizing the hard work of the family that across those states, such as Florida, New Jersey, New York, Texas, and I know there's some proposals in Oregon and others.
Now, Senator, let me ask you, obviously, to do these overhauls and everything else, it's going to require funding. How are the schools going to get the funding? Do they apply for it? Is there a grant program? How does it work? Or is this something that's looked at that the legislature is going to apportion money off to the side to be able to use as a pool for these schools? And then also with that, how will it be determined? What will the determination be as to which schools receive before others?
So I did have a separate bill to create a separate pool of funding for those that weren't able to use enough of their funds or that have separate funds, because they usually have some funding for in security and infrastructure enhancements. But so that one has not moved forward yet, and we are still trying to push for that one to move. I'll have to follow up with the chair again next week to see if there is a way that it can at least get exact out of committee, because it's been heard already. We've had the public hearing on that grant program. But with this one, it doesn't create an unfunded mandate, because there's already, OSPI already requires or mandates for the schools to have some type of emergency preparedness system in place. So, and that could just be the key card access locked door. So this would just add panic buttons to that list. It could be either or. So if they already have something in place, they could add that. But I'm hoping that the grant program will help the schools that don't have the panic buttons be able to get those panic buttons without having an unfunded mandate.
We're talking with Senator Nikki Torres from the 15th District here on The Bottom Line.
So it sounds like when you mentioned the schools, some of the schools are and some of the schools are not able to. Does OSPI, do they provide security? It kind of sounds like they provide a certain amount of security funding. But with these older schools, like you mentioned, Mount Adams, maybe some of the retrofits require more than what OSPI gives them. Is that kind of what the gist of this? And that's why you got
that's kind of what I'm hearing. Yeah, uh-huh. Because it all comes through from the capital budget. So mm-hmm. capital funding. So MSOC, they call it, material supplies and other operating expenses as needed. And that's usually what they end up using to help with their buildings.
Mm-hmm. I would certainly hope that they push that grant through, because, you know, I mean, if they don't, they're just leaving security lax at schools that are the ones that most need the upgrades.
Exactly. And especially when you look at those kind of schools like Mount Adams School District, which has the highest enrollment number of tribal students, I think that is really important. So I really painted that picture for the higher education K-12 committee when I presented this bill to them. And also, you know, just to, for your awareness, OSPI already requires that districts submit this. Actually, this bill will require the school districts to submit updated plans to OSPI by October 1st of 2025. So they already have to submit some shorter form of a plan that they're conforming with the emergency preparedness system that's in place. So they have to let them know what they have. But unfortunately, they're not really tracking it in any kind of way. So that's why we had to reach out to all 295 school districts and compiled an Excel sheet of information of who had what.
Wow.
Because I was have that.
Well, Senator, you're on the Law and Justice Committee as well. And I think it's fair to say over the last few sessions, that's probably been one of the tougher assignments for a Republican senator with all of the bad bills regarding public safety that have come through. What are some of the things that you're seeing come through committee thus far this session? Is it the same tone or is the impression they've done plenty of damage already and they're going to take it easy this session?
Well, we're still waiting for the worst of the worst to come out. You already saw Senate Bill 5181, which is to take away parental rights.
Mm-hmm.
That's already come through. What we are seeing just now in committee that just got exec this week was a different one. It's the Office of Independent Investigations and Independent Prosecutor. And why should that matter? Why should that anybody care about that? Is because that is an independent office that's going to investigate our police, especially our, not WSP, but it's going to affect our local and county police offices. And so if there is an officer-involved shooting, they are going to independently investigate, even though there's already boots on the ground that do that. They have a third party that comes in. So let's say there was a shooting in one town, I don't know which town you're in, but let's say it was Pasco, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in Pasco Police, there was an officer involved shooting, and here they have to get somebody from like Richland, somebody from across the river, to be part of this investigative team. So it's not someone directly in the Pasco Police Department that's doing that, or the county, Franklin County, either. So they're going to have their own and appoint a prosecutor. And the part that gets me with the prosecutor is that prosecutors should be elected. They should not be appointed, because then they're going to do whatever the Office of Investigation tells them to do. And the people aren't having a choice. So they could elect somebody from like the West Side to be doing these independent prosecutions.
To advance an agenda.
Yeah.
To advance an agenda. And not only that, but the fiscal note behind it was very large, and I had concerns and I brought those up. They are planning on opening about 6 offices. They have 1 right now, and they are not even able to hire fully to fully staff that office as it is, and they're still asking for more, which is a little, you know, far-fetched and telling and eye-opening at the same time, because you're like, well, why do you need money? Why are you asking for this if you can't even staff your one office that you opened up in December? Because they are fully active right now as of December 1st of 2024.
That's one that they opened, I think, in southwestern Washington, the first. Yeah.
Senator, I want to go back a little bit. You mentioned about the parents' rights bill. And, of course, the Senate Majority Leader has been in national focus after some comments he made that were a little head-scratching. You mentioned you visited some schools. And one of the things that I'm curious about what the sentiment is around Olympia, around your caucus and maybe others that where conversation may have come up around this. But one of the things that the Senate Majority Leader said, if you're old enough to get pregnant, then you're old enough to make decisions and the parents don't have a right. Now, we know that women mature faster than men, which means a girl could get pregnant at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to me that someone of a very young age would have the ability to make a clear-cut life decision without any impact from her parents and with them being taken out of the equation completely. This sounds like a disastrous thing for families in general. And what, is the state going to take care of everything?
Well, that's pretty much what they're hoping for, probably. But yes, you bring up a very valid point. 13, if they're 13 and pregnant, they are still, you know, they've brought up this argument so many times on the floor last year when they passed a horrible bill. And they kept saying, well, age 25, they shouldn't be in jail. So they were talking about people in jail and how juveniles in jail up to age 25 should not be in adult jails because their brains are not fully developed. So that kind of counteracts what they're saying here in Senate Bill 5181, saying that 13-year-olds should be able to make their own decisions. But yet you just told us that they're not mature enough to serve jail time, to know that they committed a crime. But yet you're telling us they're mature enough to make these personal decisions about their body.
It's mind-blowing.
I was just going to quickly ask, what's the reaction you get? Because it sounds like you folks have said to them, look, you tell us this over here and then you're telling this over here. What gives? What is the reaction they give you when you catch them just horrifically contradicting themselves? What's the reaction they give you?
So on the floor, they just kept pretty much, I like to use the word gaslighting, because that's pretty much what they were doing, is saying this is already in statute at 13 years of age. But yes, in statute for behavioral health, but not for other issues that come up at the school. So they can freely talk to a school counselor. He was right on that. That is in statute because they passed that into law a couple of years ago. But other than that, kids that have a loving home, especially a Latino household, we want to know about what's going on with our kids, and we better get a call from that school. And if the police come and arrest the kid at school, doggone it, they better be calling the parent too.
Well, and you bring up a very interesting point, Senator Torres, because many families, whether they're Latino families, Asian families, Black families, European mm-hmm. families, there's a certain aspect of culture that views family in particular means and ways. And you know, I don't know too many Latino families or Asian families that want the government to turn around and keep things from them when it involves their children, because the family unit, it's incredibly important in a number of different communities.
Exactly. And especially when you talk about the bill allows up to 48 hours for schools to notify parents if their child is involved in a crime or questioned by police instead of the current immediate notification. Even if the teacher was, you know, if there was a sexual assault by a staff or a teacher, they're going to give the school 48 hours to notify the parent. That should not be allowed.
Well, and then top it off, there's a bill in the House that wants to allow convicted felons, regardless of what their felony was, to be able to volunteer in schools. There's no exclusion for sexual predators. There's no exclusion for violent criminals. If you're a convicted felon and you have a rehabilitation certificate, okay, you can go work in a school as a volunteer.
Yeah, especially if they have any kind of pedophile background, I would definitely be very, very concerned with that. Mm-hmm. They should not be allowed to do that. And you know what's funny? With my panic button bill, there was someone that one of the school district staff members or someone else from a different group that happened to mention to me that, you know, maybe you should get these, those face scanners and put it at the front door so that way you're able to enter versus using the key card. And I said, oh my goodness, have you not seen the news lately? There's been principals being arrested for these sting operations.
Yeah, right.
For what they're doing to kids. And the principals, I mean, we're talking principals here, over here on the west side.
Wow.
So that, you know, I'm sure they would not go for that, especially the union, so.
Senator Nikki Torres from the 15th District, again, congratulations on your school safety bill getting out of the Senate. Hopefully it is well received on the floor and it winds up on the governor's desk for his signature. Appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks for joining us. And I know we'll be talking to you again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
And you as well.